Welcome to episode 34 of the Star Trek Discovery Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this morning, can't say tonight this time, we will be covering season 2, episode 9, which is titled Project Daedalus. And before we get started, we have some feedback from last week's episode. So let's open hailing frequencies. Yeah, so we're recording about 12 hours later than normal. So we're on Saturday morning instead of Friday night.
Yep.
So anyway, first off, we have a voicemail from Todd.
This is Todd from Indianapolis, Indiana, the thicket dweller. I was calling to say that last week's episode impressed me on the recreation of the audio landscape involving the singing plants, at which point I rated that episode 10 singing plants from the Talos Star Group.
And
is that it?
It got cut short for some reason. So, but anyway, wanted to include it anyway. Thank you, Todd. And we actually have another voicemail for this week's episode. So,
oh man, I want to hear what else he had to say.
I'm curious about the thicket dweller comment.
Yeah.
What's up with that? So, I don't know. Okay, so beyond that, we have reply feedback from LT from NC. Holy crap, you read my reply. And now we're reading your reply to our reply. Your reply. Anyway.
Yeah, you see how this goes?
Yeah. Where I found you, I listen on TuneIn Radio. Oh, okay. Because we've been there from the beginning, I know. The one thing I was curious about, like, if it could have been Spotify and iHeartRadio and stuff like that, which I know we weren't on for the first season, but we are now. So I was thinking maybe it was one of those, but okay, tune in. He says, I started listening to the other official disco podcast that stopped running. Okay, does that mean the After Trek or is that something else? Because I know there was one podcast which is called Live Long and Discover. And they stole our intro, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we had actually come out before them, and they used the same music that we did. So we didn't like them too much. And they were really negative on the show, so we liked them even less. But anyway, and he says, and I listened to the Trek Geeks Disco podcast. Those guys are okay, but I am just blown away by you guys. Well, thank you. I am telling my friends about the podcast and hoping I can get you a few more listeners. Well, LT, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Like we said on, I think, last week's podcast, like the old Fabergé organic shampoo, I think it was, commercial. Have you tell two friends and they'll tell two friends and so on and so on and so on. And if you don't get that reference, well, sorry. But that commercial, or at least style of commercial, went on for decades. Then he continues, he says, I am not a huge podcast consumer, but I found that I enjoy grabbing a listen to something fun during lunch as a good mental sorbet before going back to work. Just to throw this out, I'm prior military, prior full-time law enforcement, and currently working in the software development business. So when you said SQL, I immediately thought about SQL, not a follow-on to an original.
Like, oh, goodness.
Yeah.
Got another little coding geek.
Yep.
Just kidding.
Well, we have another one later.
Ooh.
The side note is I am also a Walking Dead fan, and I started listening to the walkthrough as well. Well, we get that a lot, or Ruthie can attest. A lot of times people will refer to that podcast as the Walking Dead walkthrough. And that's like, that's why I was one of the reasons why when I found that Star Trek Discovery Podcast.com was available, I took it.
Yeah. It took us a long time to come up with that name, but I think it's pretty good.
Anyway, I struggled through the post-Abraham season and now in the post-Rick era. Well, that sounds a lot like me. I didn't want to say jump the shark, but I hope that they can survive the malaise that seemed to hit the series in the Savior War arc aftermath. I started watching Walking Dead during their time on the farm. I saw the premiere episode and just couldn't get into it then. Oh, really?
Interesting.
Yeah, because that was what sold me on it. The cold open from it when he shot the girl.
Little girl.
Yeah. That's what got me.
Mm-hmm. And she turned around and you're like, ah!
Yep. Then he says, okay, clarity on the monastery on Boreth comment. It was the place that Baby Vok was sent. You said it. You know what? I did. Now that you say that, I just don't remember saying monastery on Boreth, but maybe I did. I'm sure I did. If I go back and listen to it, I most certainly did. So,
All right.
Well, what can you say about that? So
awesome. That's what.
All right.
And hey, if the shark fits.
Yeah. Well, I actually,
I don't know. I quit watching before then, so I don't know.
Yeah. And I think the last episode that you actually watched was the last episode you podcasted on, right?
Mm-hmm.
You stopped cold turkey.
I had to go. We're on a break and I'm not sure if we're ever going to not be on a break. So.
Yeah. I mean, right now I'm still watching and I still intend on podcasting on it. I think largely, you know, like I took off again this past week, but a lot of it has to do with the schedule. And I wish that they weren't on at the same time. That would be my thing. Then it would make it a lot easier. But the fact that they're on exactly at the same time is making it a little hard on me right now. But that's okay. And this podcast is first, and it will continue to be, because this show is amazing. I used to think of The Walking Dead in a similar way, but I think that this show, for me, huh?
I said, jump the shark.
All right. Anyway, let's move on.
Anyway, James says, just listened to you guys. Why have you been hiding from LT? And I don't know.
We definitely weren't intentionally hiding from him.
Glad he finally found you, though. I know a lot of people were asking, how could the Talosians fix Spock and win? Well, we know it definitely happened off screen. And I think the how was just kind of one of those things that we just take with a grain of salt. Going into a bunch of Trekno babble, I think would have just further confused things. I mean, think about it. We're all Trekkies and we all analyze everything like crazy. LOL. I think the writers made a good choice on not showing it for that reason. And we just know that the Talosians' mental capabilities are immense. But I'm a Trekkie and a theory guy. Wink, wink, Ruthie. So here goes. I look at it as Spock's brain is so overwhelmed experiencing past, present, and future at the same time, and all the information that comes with it, his mind can't sort it. Almost like a computer that's just so filled with data that it bogs and eventually the OS crashes. The Talosians are like servers that back up the info in his head, upgrade his RAM and processor, repartition his hard drive, reinstall the OS, and then download the info again. Because of upgrades and fresh install of the OS, it now organizes the data linearly instead of all the bits of info floating around in his hard drive. I compare his logic to like his startup sequence continuing to try and find the OS and either giving him a blue screen of death. Or the perpetually spinny blue wheel thingamadoo.
So in other words, they defragged his brain.
That's right. They defragged the hard drive, put all the pieces in the right spot. Instead of his brain viewing time as wibbly wobbly timey wimey, it is viewing it linearly. That's such a weird word to say. Linearly. Disengaging him from logic is kind of like booting into BIOS so you can change the boot sequence to conduct your repairs and upgrades. Just a fun little piece of goofiness that I came up with to reconcile what they did to fix him. Yeah. And of course, because I came up with a theory, they'll probably explain what happened next week and it'll be something totally different than my theory because they always want to make me wrong. Oh, just one more thing, Ruthie. When you said you had no idea what was going on, my mind immediately went to Carol Pelletier.
Yep, and...
I don't know what the hell's going on in the most wonderful way.
Yep.
All right.
Awesome.
Mike in Cleveland says, as Ned Stark has taught us, all everything said before is BS. So that said, I would like to say Ruthie's addition to the podcast has been amazing, but nothing. I have truly enjoyed her energy and humor, and adding her to the show was Brian's second greatest move ever. Becoming a Clevelander, clearly his greatest. And, okay, awesome. Mike, you realize I'm no longer in Cleveland, right?
Shh, don't tell him.
Yes, well, I mean, Ruthie, of course, was my host for many years on The Walking Dead Talk Through, and we had talked about doing a Star Trek podcast for years. And, like you talked about before, it was really the other podcast that was holding you back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now I get it.
Yeah. Kismet.
Yeah. And I'm going to say this last one because it's short and it's also pertaining to me. And it is from my namesake, Brian in Hawaii.
You were named after Brian in Hawaii?
I think that's impossible because I think I'm older than Brian in Hawaii. So. Anyway, he says, I noticed the SQL injections line last week, too, and got a big grin out of it. Yeah, I don't know if this might be the first time structured query language has ever been mentioned on the podcast or on Star Trek. Because I don't know. Well, it definitely was a thing around Enterprise time. It probably was around Voyager time. Yeah, it was. But it certainly wasn't as prevalent. But it's good that because in technology, it's an ubiquitous thing. Like all the database systems have some kind of form of it, unless it's a NoSQL database. But that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, I don't really know what that means.
And a lot of people that use it every day don't know what it means either. So
I use several databases, at least one anyway, at work, and I have no idea what it means. So
it's just a language that you use to query the database.
Oh.
That's all it is. Okay. Yeah.
I feel like I've probably seen that somewhere and didn't really know what they were trying to tell me by saying, did I want to do it this way? So I was like, yeah, whatever.
Select star from table.
Something. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a very crude example. Okay, moving on. So this week is covering season 2, episode 9, Project Daedalus, written by the new co-showrunner for season 3, Michelle Paradise, and directed by number one, Jonathan Frakes. And this is his third entry into Star Trek Discovery. He, of course, directed Despite Yourself last season, which was the first episode into the Mirror Universe. And he directed New Eden, the second episode this year. So this season. The description from CBS.com says, when the Discovery crew infiltrates Section 31's headquarters, suspicions arise that the crew may have a traitor in their midst. Yeah. Burnham tries to help Spock, but her efforts don't go as planned.
I mean, you could add that little sound effect to the end of almost anything to make it sound nefarious. Case in point.
It is one of my favorites, though.
I know, me too. Every time I just want to be like, where's that music? Oh, gosh.
All right. Well, anyway, that was TVMA. Actually, TVMA.
Woo. So I don't know why it would have been MA.
Because he said poop storm.
What?
It's like one of those jokes that keeps building up the more you do it.
Pretty much.
Yep. All right. So it's TVMA with Language and Violence, and it was released, of course, March 14th, 2019. And I didn't catch any Spot the 47s, but maybe somebody did. So that's why I mentioned it here. If you did catch one, let us know, and we'll mention it next week. Okay, Ruthie. Yes. I think I know what you're going to rate this one, but what did you think of Project Daedalus?
I am going to give this a 9.9999999, which if you round up is a 10.
It's funny because I guess that's a 10. And last week you gave it a 9, and we're flipping this week. I'm giving it 9 snarky Spocks because, of course, it's not all about you. But it's because of you.
Oh, yeah.
It's because of her. Okay, so I guess we'll find out more about that. But that was a nice little drop at the end.
I know. I was like, what?
That and finally the explanation at the end of the episode what Project Daedalus was, which had nothing to do with the episode except for the thing at the very end. So, but anyway, that's not why I gave it a 9. We will get into more of why I give it a 9. A lot of it has to do with, Brian, don't podcast about anything else because it affects your marks on Star Trek. So, anyway, more on that later. All right, some listener ratings. Ruthie, why don't you give the first one?
Okie dokie. LT from NC says, I give this episode 9.7 nons at the airlock switch just so it has to be said. No! Yeah, I am a fan of the Barzan.
James, he says, and I love this one, I'm giving this one 17.5 half robots, which of course equals 8.75. Perhaps I just do not like rooks. And I noticed how Tilly said that too. And I want to say, I didn't go back to actually find this, but I think that's how they pronounced it in the original series. At least maybe Bones said it or somebody, but I seem to remember somebody said in the original series, robots instead of robots.
That's just a regional dialect thing, I think.
Possibly.
So I'm sure that's how someone pronounced it one time and everybody just ran with it or something. I don't know, but. I've heard people from different areas pronounce words differently, and robots, I guess, is one of them. I say robots, you say robots.
I don't know anybody that says robots, except for Tilly now. And there are...
I think that that's kind of how the Brits say it.
Maybe.
Robot.
Well, apparently...
maybe not quite,
robot,
so...
Robot is the most affordable home robot, according to Indiegogo. And...
That's interesting. Fred from the Netherlands says 9 purring dead cats. Oh, sorry. Dead cyborgs. Man, too soon, Fred. Too soon.
More on that one later. Donna says 10 out of 10 shit storms, a.k.a. a.k.a. Pike to Cornwell. It's early. I'm not awake yet. That's my excuse.
Yeah, I know. Say, we're a little slap happy because it's morning.
Yeah, I'm a...
See,
I'm
this
a,
is what happens when you get me in the morning as opposed to the night. I'm much more energetic.
I'm much less energetic.
This is why I'm a morning person, not a night person.
Yeah, so you can be the peppy one and I'll be the laid back one this time.
Yep. I know. Usually when we record at night, I'm so tired. I'm always like 5 seconds away from falling asleep. I'm just not really, I'm so much more a morning person. I always wake up and I'm like, yeah!
Yes, and inside morning! Baseball, this has happened before. We won't tell you when it was. You'll have to figure it out. You have to go back, listen to all the podcasts and figure out when did Ruthie fall asleep in an episode. Then get back to us and tell us.
And I really can't help it. I mean, it comes to a certain point in time where my body's like, okay, time to sleep.
Listeners, this is your homework assignment. The first one that tells us when Ruthie last fell asleep in a podcast wins the bragging.
Bragging rights.
We don't have anything. But believe me, it wasn't because Ruthie was bored.
Undying affection.
Yes. Yes. But it wasn't because Ruthie was bored. Ruthie was tired. So
yeah, I have one of my friends said one time, it's like you have an off switch.
Narcolepsy.
It's so true. It's not narcolepsy. Narcolepsy is falling asleep at any point in time without whatever. But I fall asleep at night when you're supposed to.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. My wife, she always is envious of me because I seem to be able to fall asleep at the drop of a hat, but truth be told is I used to be exactly like her, which was I'd lay awake for hours at a time, unable to sleep. And then just one day I hit the point of no return where I was so tired. And after that point, I fell asleep at a drop of a hat.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. I always just, man, usually if I'm tired enough, I will fall asleep almost before my head hits the pillow. But on a normal day, I will lay my head down and about 3 minutes later, I am dead to the world. Don't try and wake me up.
It's happened to me where the funny thing is I'll be watching Star Trek, or it's not necessarily just Star Trek, but it'll happen a lot of times with Star Trek and I'll fall asleep. And I think a lot of it has to do with I'm so relaxed watching the show that I just succumb to it.
Yeah.
But
mine has absolutely nothing to do with how stimulating the environment is around me. Like if I'm interested in something, if I'm watching something I want to watch, if I'm listening to something I want to listen to, reading something I want to read, it really does not matter what is going on around me. If it comes to that point in time where my body is like, okay, it's time to sleep, then that's what happens.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
What is this bizarre segue that's happening right now?
Wondering.
Can we maybe stay on point?
Shut up, Blaine. This is on point. Anyway. Carry on. Ken from Chicago says, hashtag Star Trek Discoveries, hashtag Project Daedalus. 9 out of 10 stellar acting performances of a heretofore unknown character by an actor deprived of her two most powerful tools, her eyes and face, and of two fugitive-led Starfleet officers and all interactions with an hashtag expressive Vulcan.
Yeah, to that end, a few episodes ago, Ken, didn't you think that Arium's name was Aaron? I seem to remember. So I guess that's true. Left.
Yeah, definitely.
He had a little animated GIF there, and that is of Arium's three dots popping up in her eyes. So
interesting.
Mike in Cleveland says, I'm giving this 9 out of 10 Maxwell Smart shoe phones. I can't be the only one who went there every time they said control.
That's funny. Now I want to play the Get Smart theme.
Hold on.
Yeah, mine was from the movie.
Oh, okay. was the original.
Yeah, when we saw the movie, my stepmom and I saw the movie. We both enjoyed it greatly, and so much so that I made that her ringtone.
All right, next.
All right, another Clevelander, Rick from Cleveland, says 10 out of 10 chessboards flung across the room.
Anyway, Brian from Hawaii. He says, another phenomenal episode, 9 out of 10 gravity boots.
Nice.
Okay, it's now time for...
Yes!
In my cheesy DJ accent.
All right, LT from NC says, Stamets talks to things when he's working. The way that Sarek's kids keep struggling to make up. Detmer getting more screen time and proving she can fly a starship in the same league as the classic helmsman. While the staging was a no, I did love the Cornwell Pike speech on the bridge, the tense little exchange between Nan and Arium. the non-side eye on the bridge, and Spock saying, maybe I don't like rooks during the chess match.
Yes. I actually had that one in the in my yeses. So I'm going to play this now. I agree 100% with the point about the Cornwell Pike's beach on the bridge. And mm-hmm. I've got that as a clip.
As you can see, it is heavily fortified on all sides.
Are those mines?
They are.
The Federation does not permit the use of mines.
No.
No, they do not.
The Federation didn't build them.
I'd call that a distinction without a difference.
We were under attack by Klingon warships with cloaking abilities. Sometimes in war, the terrible choice is the only choice.
Giving up our values in the name of security is to lose the battle in advance. I'm curious. Do you sideline the Enterprise because you knew I'd never stop reminding you of that?
You sat out the war. Because if we'd lost to the Klingons, we wanted the best of Starfleet to survive. And as this conversation makes clear, that was you and all you represent.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, will you get off my ass so we can get back to work?
Yes, and I say to you, Alex Kurtzman, we know that Pike will be going back to the Enterprise probably at the end of this season. Damn it. Do not lose that character. I want a Pike series.
I want him to stay on Discovery. I'm like, no, you can't go.
Maybe the Discovery gets scuttled and it gets sent 1,000 years into the future and all of the crew have to disembark and they all come on board the Enterprise. So next season, Star Trek Discovery is on the USS Enterprise.
Ha, that's funny.
Yeah, it probably won't happen, but...
No, but we can dream.
Anyway, I had this in my yeses, and because I just love this, because this embodies exactly what I think of Pike. I just absolutely love this character, and I want him to continue. I really, really want him to continue on. He's so great. It's only 9 episodes in so far. And yeah, it's worth saying that these episodes are longer than the episodes that we were used to and, you know, on other shows. So, you know, maybe it's equivalent of 10 or something, but
not by that much though. I mean, that's not significant.
Right. I'm just saying maybe an extra episode or so, but to have made this kind of mark after this few number of episodes, I think is just amazing.
Yeah, I agree. I had something similar written down about Pike. I love Captain Pike. He's a man of action. He's decisive, rarely questions himself, and is rapidly becoming one of my favorite captains.
Yep. Yeah, he's made an indelible mark already.
Yep. Okay, next is from James. He says, we've got some backstory on Arium. We now know who, or in this case, what's going to wipe out sentient life.
Yes, we do. Yep. Ken from Chicago says, Hannah Cheeseman as Lieutenant Commander Arium. Detmer and her saying, yay for cybernetic augmentation.
Yay
for hashtag cybernetic. Spock and Cornwell and Stamets and especially Burnham. Oh, you know what? Probably supposed to say Spock and Cornwell and Stamets.
Spock and Stamets. And especially Spock and Burnham.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
So I think we've made sense of what your tweet said. So you're saying Spock with Cornwell, with Stamets, and especially with Burnham. That makes sense. Because yes, those were fantastic scenes, all three of those. Worth probably singling out at this point, because I would say I really like the Cornwell thing. Of course, you know, the fact that she is a trained psychiatrist, I think is really cool. And we see her actually use that in her interrogation of Spock, using a lie detector test and seemingly a good one. I like how it would make these little beep every time he'd say something, because he could tell that that was like, oh, he's telling the truth. I imagine if he'd lied, it would have went or
maybe not something quite so dramatic.
Probably maybe
incorrect.
Yep.
He also says Cornwell and Pike. Yes. Yes. Ooh. As we already indicated. Space mines and why Starfleet bans them. I guess Starfleet doesn't like the use of mines. Seems like a Klingon thing to do, sort of. And certainly a Borg thing to do. And how many other races have used mines in Star Trek? Quite a few, I think.
Surely the Cardassians probably did.
Oh, yes. Jerks. Yes. 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 That is very Cardassian.
And some other horrible people. I don't know.
We have more reasons why the Federation dislikes AI. Yeah. More reasons why we dislike AI. Hashtag watch the Terminator.
I know, right? Judgment Day is coming.
Yes. He continues. Cool spacesuits. And lastly, the Arium and Burnham finale.
Mm, that was gut-wrenching.
Yeah, it was. All right, next.
Okay, next, Rick from Cleveland. Yes, on the return of Cornwell. She's always a delight. And the way she made Pike blush when talking about why he had to sit out the war. Great performance from both. Yes, on the very rapid, very meaningful character development for Arium. We felt her bond to her friends as she inventoried her memories. We did not get to know her well, but wow, we felt that loss. Yes, for Stamets and Spock bonding in engineering. I loved how they each lent perspective to one another's personal issues. And Ethan Peck is doing great as Spock. When you get him separated from Burnham, he finds that subtle line between sarcasm and humor with a stoic expression that Nimoy instilled in the character. Yes, for Tilly fighting to reach her friend and succeeding. Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible. Brian in Hawaii, he finishes out the listener yeses with the backstory on Arium. All-female away team? Yeah, all-female away team. Admirals weren't actually corrupt. Well, we know Cornwell wasn't corrupt, but it was a bit of a surprise, I thought, in the end that the admirals weren't corrupt.
Thought so?
Well, it just seemed like a trope that it seemed to be going for, and I liked in a way that they weren't, because I was kind of expecting that to be them framing Spock for some reason, and you know, didn't end up that being that way. But more on this later. Our yeses. So Ruthie, why don't you lead them off, because I have no idea what you have.
There were a couple of times when they went into a shot, like an opening sequence, I guess, the opening, I don't know, the fade intro, whatever thing, was like a spin.
Yes, they did that with Cornwell coming in on the shuttlecraft.
Uh-huh. And then again, when they were, there was another one, I think it was the first, right after the cold open, like the first, they spun into that one as well.
Of the ship? Or do you mean?
They were on the ship and.
Oh, yeah, that was the Cornwell one. Yeah.
Well, it spun in when she came in on the shuttle, when she was arriving. And then they were, I just remember there, I think they were walking like down a corridor or something, and it spun in again. I was like, I'm loving this spinny thing. And this spinny thing was cool.
Okay. Yeah. Cause the one I was thinking of specifically was in the shuttle bay. But there kind of was one, it was a really long shot of Discovery as the shuttlecraft was coming in. And I thought that was like a really beautiful kind of shot, showing the beauty of Discovery. And I heard a couple other podcasts comment about this week, saying how the look of Discovery is so different compared to, you know, some of the other starships that we're used to seeing on Star Trek, but that because it's very angular. And yet when you see it like in this like long shot like that, how beautiful it looks. And I mean, it is a beautiful ship. And as I say that, I have it in my hand here. Which I'm going to open my camera for a second, Ruthie, just so you can see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look at that.
Ooh, spin it. Show it so it spins. That's kind of how the spinning shot was.
Yeah.
So that was a little faster than, and thank goodness, because I think that we would get motion sick if they did it that fast on the episode. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. It is beautiful.
Yep. Super cool.
Listeners, you won't be able to have seen that, but I have the Eagle Moss model of the Star Trek Discovery, and it is beautiful. And it sits on my desk every time that we record. All right, what else do you have?
I also have Stamets' interaction with Spock. I thought sometimes Vulcans can be quite closed-minded, and which leads to a, I guess, sort of feeling of arrogance about them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they necessarily are arrogant, but the way that they interact, I think, with other species can sort of appear to come off as arrogance.
I think that some of the Vulcans have a disdain for other species, other humanoids that act with emotion. I don't think it's unilateral across the species. I think it's just some, like these logic extremists, for example.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think what it is a, honestly, it's a lack of understanding, but they kind of sort of, it's like they don't or are unable or can't recognize that intelligence comes in more than one form. I guess.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Spock is recognizing that when he is, when he's talking to Stamets. His logic brain can't understand why Stamets would be talking to an inanimate object, which clearly he's smart enough or intelligent enough to know is not going to talk back to him.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's like the Vulcans don't understand the idea of emotional intelligence. And
right.
They lack emotional intelligence themselves. So they've dealt with it by purging emotion from their daily interactions. So they've done everything to deal with their lack of control of emotions by purging emotions altogether. Like, in other words, not necessarily getting rid of them, but suppressing them completely.
Right.
Whereas, and I think that this is where humans have dealt with it, because I think by and large, humans have been better able to have emotional intelligence. I would say that not everyone is emotionally intelligent, but we seem to have a better grasp at being emotionally intelligent as well as being intellectually intelligent. So we've dealt with it a different way. Like humans in Star Trek, I should say, have dealt with emotional components differently. We deal with it by being more intelligent about our emotions, being able to deal with them better, whereas Vulcans try to suppress them. Now, I think Spock, in his half-human, half-Vulcan, he, I think, has better understanding of emotions than a Vulcan does. But so I think he can look at Stamets' situation and be able to understand what's going on better and kind of get down to it with a dispassionate look at it, but look at it more objectively than Stamets is looking at. Because, you know, Stamets is doing what most people in that situation would do, at least at the start of it.
Right.
Look at it. Stamets is looking at it from the perspective of Stamets. And why is this happening to me? Why is he reacting this way to me?
Whereas, he's in it. So he can't.
Right. He's too close to it. So Spock sees it for what it is. And I think we've mentioned on the podcast, I think I've noticed this way, and I think you have too, and I think listeners have too, is that the problem is that Culber is going through this problem where he doesn't know where the heck he is. Like, he's so disconnected from his old self that he can't deal with it properly. So he needs time away to figure stuff out. And I think Stamets was too close to it to be able to understand that this isn't all about him. This is all about Hugh trying to understand his place in the world and how this new Culber will deal with things. And I think in the end, after, you know, a couple more episodes, he'll figure stuff out. And I think Hugh and Paul will be together again like they should be. And because I think they make a great couple and very supportive. And I think they complement each other great. And, you know, it's really tough to see what Hugh's going through, but it totally makes sense. And anyway, Spock makes a great observation here that I think when Paul hears it, I think it kind of clicks for him finally that he understands that, it's not, he just needs time away just to figure stuff out. So,
he sometimes you need other people to say something to you in order for it to click in your brain.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So, Hugh needs time to understand Hugh.
It's like I say, this is not exactly the same thing, but it's darn close. Is like at work, I'll find that things don't seem to click for other people until they hear it from more than one person.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, say I'll look at a problem and I'll go, well, you know, this is going to be a problem. And, you know, the manager will look at it and go, oh, Brian, you're just, you know, being you know, whatever. And really not kind of give it a lot of serious thought until someone else independently of me says the exact same thing. And they go, you may have something there. And I'm not taking that. That's not personal. This is just how people work. I've had the same thing happen to me where someone says this something to me and I don't really take consideration of it too much until someone else says the exact same thing. You know, it's just a thing. So I think Stamets hearing this from Spock, kudos to Spock for seeing it, because I think he hits it dead on, and good for Stamets for being able to see it and to understand that that is the truth. So,
and also giving it right back to Spock. The ocean waves sounds as the end credits music. Oh my gosh. Oh,
yes. Yes.
That was just trying to rip the heartstrings straight out of my chest.
Yeah. Rick from Cleveland also mentioned this in his feedback. He says, the credits, they only seem silent. Turn up the volume. Maybe grab a box of Kleenex first. Yeah, that's a good point. Thankfully, I was watching it with headphones on.
Me too.
So when it came on, I definitely was able to pick up on it. But I also watched it on TV directly without headphones on. And that second time I watched it, I couldn't hear it. So I was like, oh, this is – now I get where that comes from. Because you can't hear it unless you have the headphones on, unless you have it on really loud. So what else you got?
I mean, I didn't really write anything else down specifically because, honestly, the whole episode was awesome to me. So I just wrote down a couple of things that I was like,
Well, I had a few yeses that were related to other yeses that were brought up, but some specifics there. I'll just mention, what is it about the look on my face that suggests I've changed my mind? And that was when Cornwell was kind of trying to justify the fact about moving in forward to the headquarters.
Right.
Yeah. I loved the pre-Spock Burnham. Well, I guess it wasn't pre because it started. Then we had the act ended, you know, and we had a break, which for us is like 1 second because we don't have the commercials. But it was basically it ends with "Let's play chess." So I thought that was a good callback to some things we've seen in early season two, because we saw that they had that chessboard at Sarek and Amanda's house. But of course, you know, Spock had the chessboard on the original series. So I thought that was cool that they were playing chess. And I thought that was actually a good thing, and how she said, you know, oh, you're afraid to lose or something like that. I like that too. But the great Spock and Burnham confrontation with Spock smashing the chessboard and how he really got to Burnham. I thought that scene was amazing. It was great acting, great writing, great direction, just great all the way around.
She is accustomed to dealing with him, non-emotionally, You know, she doesn't really ever... I think when she interacts with him, she's very guarded. I mean, that's the way that she was brought up.
Right.
Obviously, because she was brought up in a Vulcan household, but she did have Amanda as well. That was really, a stellar job also with Sonequa and Ethan Peck.
Yes.
Just the subtleties of it. That's the thing about when you are acting as a Vulcan is you can't be as expressive as you normally might be.
Right.
And so in order to convey those things, they have to be a little bit more undertone and subtle and that kind of stuff. And just, it was so great watching them.
Yeah.
And just the whole, I think also the I don't know if it's necessarily an idea or concept or whatever, but the whole thing about how the things that happen to us as children can impact our life kind of for the rest of it. So it's very, very complex and awesome.
Yes. Yeah. It's like you said, like you've got Ethan Peck who is playing, half Vulcan science officer Spock. Call back to last week. And the Burnham, who many people, especially first season, accused her of being cold and calculated and just unemotional. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, she's playing Vulcan. She's playing a human playing a Vulcan.
So her first is to be not necessarily cold, but being logical in her in her actions. And to see Spock be able to get under her skin like he did, giving it back to her, actually, kind of a payback from what she did to him when they were kids, was very fitting. And you could see that she really got affected by Spock's words there, because at the same time, though, it's also very true. I think the things that he says are actually probably true, that
But he said those things in a very cruel way, though. I mean, when you're a child, you don't have the same perspective as you do as that of an adult.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think certain, certainly not all, but certain kids are much more apt to accept that responsibility and blame. However wrong that might be, that's still kind of just something that you do. And the way that he equates it to hubris, which I don't think is fair. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's, you're right. It's completely wrong. Of course you can't control or be responsible for everything or whatever, because that's just, it's not possible. But equating it to me anyway, it was him, he was equating it to her being arrogant about it, which I'm kind of like, no, that's you. And that's kind of, and that's also what happens a lot in situations like this. We kind of, the way that we act about things and the way that we feel about things, we project onto other people, assuming that other people, all other people, interact and react and have the same emotions and feelings that we do, which, again, not true.
Not true.
So, but sometimes it's hard to, I guess, get that perspective, to get out of your own head, kind of, to realize that not everyone feels XYZ about ABC, you know? So, so I just, I don't know. I thought, yeah, what he's saying is true, but you don't have to be such a dick about it.
Yes. He's a dick about it in ways that only Vulcans can be dicks.
I know. I was like, man, you're such a jerk.
Would you say that? I'm thinking of the, was it Take Me Out to the Holosuite, that Deep Space Nine episode where they play against, I can't remember the captain's name, but the rival of Sisko. And because
he, like, says that we're physically superior, so therefore we will win.
Yes. But just the overall, the
the arrogant.
I'm thinking back to that episode, how he spent like great numbers of effort and time writing, you know, dissertations about Sisko. And, you know, all of the things about, like, how you know, emotion is, anyway, it's just funny. Takes me back to that. Yeah,
that was a good episode.
Yeah, it was. All right, so that's it for our yeses, and now it's time for our noes.
No.
I always think when we are doing these Spock episodes, the fact that that is Picard, but he is mind melded at the time to Sarek.
Sarek, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and, so.
Oh, man, that was such a great episode.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Gosh. Mm. See, anytime that people claim that Vulcans don't have feelings, I just want to point to that episode.
Yes.
Be like, nope, look here.
Yeah. Okay, so we have. I've been trying to cull through all the feedback that we get and try to, like, combine stuff where it makes sense. So we got a whole thing about one particular piece of the episode, and it was something that I noticed as well. So I have comments after this, but it has to do with Non's suspicions. So first is Ken from Chicago. He says, the new chief of security was suspicious of Arium, but did nothing to stop her. Brian from Hawaii says Non wasn't assertive enough about her suspicions of Arium. Fred from the Netherlands also had as a hold your horses, not as a no, but I'm going to group these all as no's. Non-observing conspicuous behavior in area, but reporting nothing. Rick from Cleveland also had this as a hold your horses. He says, Non was clearly suspicious of Arium. If you see something, say something. And to that, I said, I'm glad all of you brought this up because I was trying to figure out as a way to explain why I was taking issue with this. She was slinking around and it was really noticeable, yet no action was taken against Arium. I was thinking it was most annoying how she was just hiding around in the back, not saying anything. But, you know, in the end, it's like, what was the point of that? Like, why did, to me, that should have been on the cutting room floor because if anything, Non did not act. And I think maybe one look or something would have been enough, but they kept going back to it. And it just,
I feel like that's a scene that should have been in a previous episode.
Yes. And that we'll get to that in a bit. But yes, it should have been in a previous episode. I think it would have made a lot more sense if they had referred to this before. And yeah, so more on this in a bit. But yes, all of you brought this up, and I wholeheartedly agree with this issue because it was really annoying to me, and I didn't understand it. To me, this should have been on the cutting room floor, at least all but one references to it, because like literally you're sitting there like, okay, Non, why don't you say something? You know, and instead, she goes on the away team with her. Like, shouldn't she have said something to Pike at that point to say, Captain, I don't know if Arium should be on this mission, but no, she says nothing.
Yeah, it's kind of, I didn't think, I wrote this down somewhere. I don't know why Non thought that she would be able to keep her eyeballs on Arium 100% of the time on the away mission.
Yeah.
Because she kind of was like, when Arium was like, ooh, I should go down there. And Non was like, but she didn't really stop it.
Yeah.
She just thought, well, I will be on you like white on rice. It's like, well, you can't really do that when you're a three-person away team.
Right.
You kind of got to, sometimes you got to split up and do stuff. It's not like you can have the buddy system 100% of the time. So anyway, I just wrote that down as a, oh yeah, Commander Non should have known she wouldn't be able to keep her eyes on Arium 100% of the time. That's what I wrote down.
Well, and the other thing too with that is we see her and Non isn't doing anything on the bridge. She's just standing there like in the corner watching Arium and not actually doing anything except for watching Arium. And it was like I said, to me, they just should have cut this from the episode entirely. It just didn't work. And it is part of where I docked. So
yeah. I thought that, to me, I would have been instantly suspicious when someone is asking me about, oh, so that's how you breathe, right?
Yeah.
Like, why do you want to know? So, I don't know. I thought, you know, she's not just asking as a, oh, hey, let's talk about our cybernetically whatever augmentation, blah, blah stuff. Let's bond over that. No, it was like, so that's how you function, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yes. All right. So the next one, and I'm going to read this one too, because I had a reaction to this. Arium's death. James says, killing off Arium. And this is where, unfortunately, I think me podcasting on The Walking Dead affected my rating of this episode, because we got a Walking Dead trope in this episode, not specific to Walking Dead, but we got R.I.P. T-Dog. Essentially, let's give a bunch of lines to a minor character that we haven't really featured in the past, so we get to know them a little bit before we kill them off.
Yeah, that's like The Walking Dead's version of Red Shirt.
Yeah. So it was one of those things. It's like as soon as they went to her quarters and had her saving and deleting files and then Tilly comes in and all that, I thought, uh-oh, she's dead.
She gonna die.
Yeah, and that's why this went down to a 9, because it was a great episode, but the problem was that they did that stupid thing that, to me, essentially what it is they realize in episode 9, oh, we're going to kill off Arium. I guess we should have some scenes with her. Like,
I guess we should make the audience love her a little bit.
Yeah, it's kind of like, hey, you know, why didn't we get
jerks?
What would have worked here, what would have made sense is if they had had these scenes throughout the season so that we got a little bit of this all the way through the first 8 episodes. And then in episode 9, we kill her off after we've already gained some feelings about her. And yes, the episode was very effective because it really sold these things really well in the episode. My point is that they did this just in this one episode. And I think it would have worked so much better for me if it had been strewn about the rest of the season. And for us to get this all loaded into this one episode, we all wanted to see more about Arium. Okay. I really thought that this was something that I wanted to see. I think everyone that had mentioned her before wanted to see what was the deal with her. Yeah. It was great to find out that she was, in fact, a human that had obviously gone through something terrible to get to where she was. And my point that I had with that is we didn't even get to know that much about Arium before they killed her. Like, why, in what happened to her, why did she become a cyborg? Like, what happened to her in this crash that turned her into the Arium that we know? And I'm guessing that her husband died. That stands to reason based on what we hear. But like, what happened to her? Like, how much of her was, maybe we'll find out next week when they kind of do like a little funeral or eulogy to her. Maybe we'll find that out. But it's just like, I wanted to know those things too. So anyway, I think it just seemed, what they did this episode seemed very tacked on. And that's kind of why it was a 9 for me. It was almost like, while it worked great in the episode itself, it was not as effective because we didn't get it all through the season. If we knew about this in the 8 episodes prior, this would have been a 10 for me, but it wasn't. So, or sorry, a 9.99999999999.
I just can't give out a 10. Okay. That means perfection. And it's really hard to be perfect.
Yeah.
Trust me. I know.
Brian in Hawaii had similar thoughts. He says, Arium's friendships didn't seem earned. Should have built up the character more prior to her final episode. 100% agree.
Yeah.
All right, next.
All right. LT from NC says, okay, my no's are pretty simple. Why is it no one noticed Arium doing all these things she was doing on the network? Maybe Starfleet needs better system admins. And another thing. No. So Arium doesn't have that much memory storage. It's the future. So why do I feel like her augmentation has about as much memory as my smartphone does now? Maybe memories take up more space than a 1080p video does. We don't know.
Yeah, I tend to think that they do, because you know, it's like 3D and, you know.
Yeah. Audio visual.
Yeah. Probably sense around.
Three-dimensional. Yeah.
Yeah. Smells.
Yeah, sights, sounds, smells, feels, as well, you know, feelings as well, like emotions, as well as sensory touch feelings.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I do.
With your fingers.
Right in the feels.
Anyway, yeah, in the feels. Pike doing the heroic pose in front of the screen while Cornwell gives him the you're so super speech. Oh, you didn't like that?
LT.
Oh, come on, man. Give Pike a little love.
It might have been tropey, but. You know,
I didn't mean it was bad.
Yeah, I don't think it was bad. I think if anything, it's like, well, Pike is kind of,
tropes are tropes for a reason.
It's kind of like, gee, thanks. Well, my thought about the Arium memory storage thing, I think this is kind of it's a remnant of the old Star Trek technology. It's like they're able to change some things, but if you remember correctly, they've always dealt with like memory crystals and memory units and things like that, like discs. Like we see Spock in the menagerie popping in certain discs like you would in the old days, like a floppy drive. Mm-hmm. So I think some of that is indicative of that kind of thing. Whereas, of course, you know, we use more things that are, you know, built-in storage these days. That's where I think it's coming from. Because we even see that with Stamets and going through the pieces and parts, and it's like, you're okay, you're okay.
Yeah, that was funny. You're okay, and you're okay. That was pretty awesome.
I asked James about this next thing. He says, no sneak peek at next week. And I was like, what do you mean no sneak peek at next week? Apparently, I don't know if this is true. Anyone else that uses the Amazon service, like gets CBS All Access through Amazon can chime in on this, but he didn't see the sneak peek where I get it through CBS All Access, and I certainly saw the sneak peek. So I don't know. I don't know what happened there. Maybe Amazon posted the wrong version of the video or something. I don't know. Because I think they take down those like next ons later on in the season.
Hmm.
But
well, anyway. I know you can certainly probably find them on Google.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I think James has seen it now. So
good.
Yeah.
No more complaining.
Well, you notice what he didn't complain about. Something that Ken complains about in his nose.
Yeah, I did see that. So Ken from Chicago says, Pike kept getting up from his chair to walk to the window too many times. Wouldn't a shuttle have been easier to fly through the mines?
And I thought, couldn't they just beam over? But I guess they were shielded, so I guess they couldn't do that.
I mean, maybe, I don't know. Like, wouldn't you need the whole, like, I wouldn't, why would you cut off part of your resources if you could get them over? Like, having the whole Discovery is better than having just a shuttle.
Yeah, true.
That's what I would think. Anyway, where's Section 31 HQ defensive phasers and torpedoes?
Yeah.
They don't need them. They have the mines.
I guess.
And, of course, no Jet Reno. Yeah, I'm sorry, guys, but I think Tig is just busy.
And here's something I will throw out there. If Arium ends up it not being her last episode, and something I mentioned in the Hold Your Horses, well, I'm just going to leave it at that. If this ends up not being her last episode, and we just mentioned no Jet Reno, put two and two together, mull on this for a few minutes, and then I'll tell you what I think. So, Brian in Hawaii has one more thing that he mentioned as a nose, and that is, Burnham's randomness game evasive maneuver suggestion was lame and seemed ineffective. Yeah, I didn't think it was terribly effective.
Well, I thought it worked pretty well. They got through, didn't they?
Yeah. All right. Do you have any no's?
I mean, no, not specifically.
I had a couple of incidental no's beyond what I already mentioned. First of all, Tilly, stop sucking up.
She can't help it.
It's like, ah. She's got to go over there. And, like,
she's always been that person.
I know. It's just like, you know, Admiral, I'm not fugitive. It's like, just stop it.
That's part of her personality, though. She can't help it. That's just.
How
that's
will just she scary. Be when it's time for her, you know, 20 years from now to be the legendary captain that she is destined to be? Will she still suck up then? Or will she finally harness a little bit of Captain Killy?
No, she won't still be sucking up then. She'll be Captain Killy, obviously.
Well, hopefully she won't be Captain Killy. She'll be Captain Tilly. But okay, so Reese, you said slice the hull like cheese. Wouldn't it be like pizza? I mean, come on. Discovery's saucer section is more like a pizza cutter.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. That's funnier than that.
Okay, yeah, that was super funny. Definitely like pizza.
Yeah.
Oh, you had to get your own laugh track. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Lastly, something that Detmer says. Sensors are saying we're upside down. What do you mean you're upside down? You're in space. Yeah. There is no upside down.
Yeah. Well, I think, though, that is probably, to me anyway, that's something that is probably like the inertial dampeners sort of do. Like, they sort of give you the illusion of being a certain way in relation to how you grew up on a planet, and that planet's gravity makes up and down sort of permanent. Whereas if you're in... I mean, and this is always something that when I'm watching space shows and crap, I think, honestly, the only show that takes place in outer space that I've seen do this really well is The Expanse.
Mm.
Because that's because the books are written this way, but I've seen this on a couple of different movies too, but 99 times out of 100 things that take place in space, they still orient them as though there is an up and a down. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard for me to visualize or imagine no up and no down, because my whole life has had an up and a down, you know?
Yes, one would expect ups and downs.
So as far as, you're funny, gravity goes, I mean, that's how we as humans interact with our surroundings. You know, there's an up and a down. There's gravity makes things go up or makes things come down, and they can't go up, and overhead is backwards because it's not possible. So I don't know. I just kind of think that that's probably the ship has some kind of something that makes them feel as though they still have gravity interacting on them, and that they are not in three dimensions, in a three-dimensional world, environment, experience kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? That makes sense?
Yes. Yes. And I don't know where this is, but I'm going to try.
What goes up must come down. Spinning wheel got to go round. Talking about your troubles, it's a crying sin. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel spin. You got no money.
I think that was pretty appropriate to this episode.
Yeah. I love that song. We used to play that in marching band. Got that good brass section.
Yeah. All right. And speaking of a good brass section, let's move on to our Hold Your Horses.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell? What the hell? Hold your horses.
Oh, it never gets old. It never gets.
Every time.
Every time. Best thing I've done as far as the sound effect.
Yeah, that was definitely a very good decision.
Yeah. All right. Why don't you read James's?
All right. James says, did the Talosians forget to re-engage Spock's logic? He's highly emotional and not even trying to hide it.
Yes. And he's enjoying emotion. He's enjoying anger.
Mm-hmm. Anger is a secondary emotion, though.
Hmm. Second to what?
It depends.
Ah.
Are you feeling fear? Are you feeling sad?
Hmm.
Feeling vulnerable? Anger is not usually the first emotion.
Yeah.
Cover up your...
It's a reaction.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because I'm feeling sad, vulnerable, whatever.
Right.
Usually. I mean, not always the case, but usually it's I'm angry because of this other emotion I'm feeling.
That's a good point.
So what is he really feeling?
What is he really feeling?
We don't know.
I think I'm going to have to call a penalty at this point for too many uses of shock horror.
No, I don't think that's possible.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't think that's possible.
No, I don't think it's possible either. All right. So this was not in the Hold Your Horses. He didn't list it as such, but it seemed after reading it that it seemed like a Hold Your Horses. So I listed it there from LT. From NC, he says, I have to throw this in as it bothered me enough that I watched the episode a partial third time before bed last night. Back to the scene at the airlock. It's not a full-on no, but it is what bothered me so much. Watching Michael ignoring orders and struggling to pull the switch. It was acted well. It was a very tense scene, but I found myself angry that she couldn't just pull the switch. I'm sure the Navy guys were trained for it. I know I was in the Army. And in my police training, that sometimes in order to save lives, you have to make hard decisions in tense situations that could result in someone dying. Maybe they will play this into how she failed to protect Giorgio in the first season. It was well acted and it was stressful and sad, but she needed to cowgirl up and pull a switch. As great points, LT, I would agree. And everyone seemed to realize this, and yet she just couldn't do it. And you know, I'd say good thing for Nan to be there to be able to do it for her, because even though she was obviously struggling.
I think that's – I have to put a pause on your pause.
Okay.
I think that's not necessarily on LT's pause. I think, yes, you can be trained for that, but until you're in the situation, I mean, who can say what would really happen? I can say all day until I'm blue in the face, well, I would do this. But until I'm actually in that situation, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know that I would necessarily be able to kill one of my very good friends.
Well, I think even Irium realized that she had to do it.
But self-sacrifice is completely different from killing one of your friends. I'm sorry, but it is. I can say to you, if you don't pull this trigger and kill me dead, I will slit your throat. And I am basically telling you to kill me, but that doesn't mean that you'll be able to go, okay, unless you're a complete psychopath.
Well, that's true.
I mean, how many people would be able to say, all right, come on, give her a minute. And it wasn't it wasn't down to the last wire. I mean, you've seen that, we can't disarm the bomb until there's 1 second left on the clock. It was almost that.
Yeah.
But I, for one, was thankful that Nan did it because...
Yeah.
Arium, so that Burnham didn't have to kill her friend. You know, Nan wasn't as close to Arium as Burnham was. I mean, these people have been through a lot. They went to the Mirror Universe together.
Yeah.
They had all of these experiences, and that's just... She might have been raised by Vulcans, but she's not Vulcan. She can't just say the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one and have it be so. Just like, you know, Captain Kirk going through the exact same thing. I can't kill my friend. So his friend had to do it for him.
Do you mean...
Logic clearly dictates that the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
Yes.
Or the one.
I was waiting for the right moment to play that.
Yeah. Which was played out to dramatic effect at the end of...
Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. Khan! Oh, sorry. No! Anyway, I just don't... I feel like, yeah, she was being ordered to do it, but until you're in that situation... And maybe LT has been in that situation. I don't know. But I don't think it's safe to say that just because of XYZ, you should be able to pull the trigger and kill your friend.
You know, I wonder... Because, at least from what we see, Burnham had not attended Starfleet Academy. She had attended the Vulcan Science Academy, right?
Yeah.
Did she ever go through the Kobayashi Maru?
Probably not.
So, I wonder if she's ever really experienced this situation. But the point I was going to make...
The no-win situation?
Exactly. So, it makes me wonder, would she be ready to command her own starship?
No.
I don't think she would be, not at this point.
This is a perfect example of why.
Yeah.
Because as a captain, you do have to make those kinds of decisions.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not sure I would. I'm not sure I would be able to look at my very best friend and say, I'm sorry, you have to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I mean,
this is my roundabout way of basically saying that I don't think she is ready for the chair.
No. And
so I think... By the end of the series, she may be, and of course, I think Saru is further along than Burnham is at this point, but that proves to me right there that she's not ready to command. Essentially, right now, this is where she should be as science officer, because she was in a position where she had to make a tough call, and she didn't make it. She had trouble following the order, and...
For her, she's still looking for another solution.
Yeah.
There has to be another way. Because so far in her life experiences, that has been the case.
She doesn't accept the no-win scenario.
Right. Because she has always been able to come up with another solution and have it work out.
So in other words, she reprogrammed the Kobayashi Maru to allow.
No, she's never actually experienced the Kobayashi Maru.
I know. I was more.
Well, that's. Of Kirk. I mean, there is a difference. You know, there is a difference between cheating the system and winning, and not ever having actually played that game.
Yeah, and I think these are the kind of experiences that teach a person to be able to do the thing that needs to be done. And you know, it's kind of funny. I think Tilly would have been able to do it, even though she would have been tortured by it. But I think. This is where I think Tilly will eventually become a great captain because there is something in her that allows her to summon up the courage to be able to do hard things like this. And for whatever reason, I think Burnham is great. She's not there yet. I think she will get there. I think Saru is there, although he's still got his own little post-ganglia issues at this point.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the whole Kobayashi Maru and the idea behind it, I think honestly, I mean, when you're in it and you're doing it, you kind of still know that it's not real. But I think it helps to give you the perspective of there isn't always a solution.
Yeah.
That where everybody comes home.
Yeah.
And I think that is the necessary requirement to be able to understand that you can't necessarily always win, at least in the way that you want to. So I think that's what the real lesson of the Kobayashi Maru is. Not necessarily of, can I basically kill my friends or colleagues or whatever? I mean, because that's kind of what it boils down to.
Yeah.
It's knowing and experiencing the fact that there's not necessarily always going to be a way to do something to win without losing, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's funny that this reminds me of sort of a cross, an intersection between The Walking Dead and Star Trek, is that in The Walking Dead, sometimes the characters have to be forced to end up in situations where there is a no-win scenario, and characters like Rick and Michonne and Carol have had to deal with this in the past. It's just funny because we had mentioned The Walking Dead, made me think of it, especially with this episode. Yeah. All right. We have one more Hold Your Horses from listeners. You want to read that one?
All right. Brian in Hawaii says, did the Talosians fail to reset Spock's logic? The same thing as James said. He's being very emotional. Excellent acting, though.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, well, I think that Spock still needs to come to the point where Spock is the Spock that we know. And he's not quite there yet. And I think by the end of the season, he will be much more there.
Yeah.
All right. So, shockingly, Ruthie has a Hold Your Horses that I'm dying to hear.
I do. Okay. When they are approaching the Section 31 starbase and they have the whole mine conversation, Admiral Cornwell basically promises that she can control the mines. So you've been locked out of control, but you think you can still control these mines?
Yeah. <"What> the? Yeah, about that, Cornwell.
That doesn't really seem like something that you should promise, given the givens.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a good point. Anything else?
No, that was it.
Okay.
Just that one.
I just want to say that logic extremism is, by its very definition, illogical. If you think about it, because, like, for example, you are illogical. We will purge all illogic from, you know, all emotion from our system. So we will kill, which to me, in most cases, especially if it is not required, is an illogical act. There's really nothing very logical about the extremists.
But that depends on how you view life.
Okay.
Do you feel like all life has a right to live or has a right to survive?
Well, if I personally do.
Do Vulcans?
I would hope that they do, because they came up with infinite diversity in infinite combinations, which to me expresses the fact that they do, or at least they do, unless they're a logic extremist, which, again, to me, seems like an emotional reaction to the lack of logic.
I don't know. I see where you're coming from, but I feel like that is applying a standard to them that is not necessarily, it's a human, if you will, way of viewing the world, not necessarily a Vulcan way of viewing the world. So I understand why you would think that, but I don't think that that's necessarily the case.
There are no other logical solutions.
No other logical solutions? But Ambassador, there are always other solutions. You have said so yourself many times.
What I meant was that
Sarek of Vulcan would never be afraid of looking straight at something he did not want to see.
I warn you, your efforts to discredit me will not succeed.
Sarek of Vulcan never confused what he wanted with the truth.
I will not be spoken to in this manner.
I hear anger in your voice.
It would be illogical for a Vulcan to show anger. It would be illogical. 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 Illogical.
I think you know why I wanted that clip.
It's illogical. Illogical.
I have to have to trim that one down, but yeah, so
I think, I mean, not to be all religious or anything, but it's like when you are thinking about, if you ever think about God or the powers that a supreme being might have, they're supposed to be omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and all that kind of stuff. Personally, yeah, well, personally, that's not really something that I can visualize, because I put my own human limitations on the powers that such a supreme being supposedly has or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I can't I limit that person or that being based on my own experience. I can't say what it is to be omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, all that stuff, because I don't personally have that power.
When I think of God, I think of John DeLancey.
Okay. Oh, Q.
Yeah. Okay. Q is not God, but no. Q is definitely omnipotent.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Anyway, that's kind of what I think. Like, you are sort of putting your own value system or your own perspective on what you think it is to be logical, which is not necessarily the same thing as what the Vulcans think it is to be logical. Or how they treat logic or interact with logic or whatever.
It is illogical to think of logic in any other way than the Vulcans think of logic.
Than logic. I don't know. I mean, I just think that it's not necessarily that I can see it, honestly. I could see that kind of logic-based extremism. It's basically like completely removing emotion and acting as though you were a machine, a computer, an AI who is physically incapable of experiencing emotions or having any kind of emotional intelligence at all.
I will not be spoken to in this manner. Anyway, let's keep going. Why didn't Burnham try to save Nan? That was one thing. It's like
she was a little busy trying to not get her butt whooped.
Well, I'm thinking more like when she was behind the door. Like,
Why didn't she immediately run over and?
Yeah.
I have other things to say about that.
Okay. Now, if you haven't seen the short treks, maybe you want to fast forward 30 seconds or so. So, in the short treks, Calypso, is this how Zora becomes a thing? Is it basically the knowledge of Irium that gets downloaded into the computer that eventually becomes its own AI mixed with Irium's memories?
Maybe. I was kind of wondering how Calypso plays into this.
Yeah, I'm still wondering.
I know. I'm like, this is so like, it just kind of shows how Calypso could relate, I guess, to this season, I think, based on where it seems like we're going as far as AI and stuff.
Yeah. It's like maybe the Red Angel has to work from a point in the distant future, and maybe that future is the discovery of the Calypso time or something like that. I don't know. Okay. So here's another thing. Admiral Pitar, which I heard and I kept thinking Pitar, Patak. Like, that's a Klingon thing. They keep on saying that, you know, oh, this Patak. Anyway, Pitar has an accent. Did you notice this? I noticed it last week, too. It doesn't sound like she's speaking. It almost like I looked up the actress, and her name is Tara Nicodemo. So I don't, but.
Did you look her up?
Well, there's not much that I can say about her. She's a Canadian actress. Oh. She played in a series called I've never heard of before, but Canadians, you can, because I haven't lived in Canada for, you know, a number of years. Like,
don't you mean Canada?
Don't say that. Don't say that, please.
That's an inside GSM joke. Thank you very much.
Yes, I know it is, but anyway, it is insulting in a way. it's fine. Anyway, Across the River to Motor City is a series that came out like 2007, it looks like. I've never heard of it before, but it has something to do with some drama that takes place in Detroit and Windsor, my hometown. So, but she was in that show. And, yeah, so, I mean, it doesn't seem like she is from some place where she would have an accent, but there was just some weird speech affect that I've never heard a Vulcan have before. Although I think we have heard Vulcans that have, English accents, which I don't quite understand either. But yes, another thing, one thing that Detmer said that made me think, yeah, this is a question of the rank not fitting the representation on the show. Something that when Arium gets the away duty, Detmer says, don't forget about us little people. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, she's telling that to Lieutenant Commander Arium. You know, it's like, they're not exactly little people. They're pretty senior officers on the bridge. So
I know, right? You know. You're a bridge crew, so
yeah.
Pipe down.
Yeah. And last thing I had to say, and hold your horses, Cornwell's shuttle looked awfully scuffed up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering what the deal is with that. And why can't the Federation, you know, throw a coat of paint on a shuttle?
Hey, man, she's on the lam. You don't have time to go into space dock.
I guess that's true. Okay, so that's it for Hold Your Horses. So let's move on to our feedback segment and open hailing frequencies yet again. All right, so we have a voicemail from our friend Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for episode 9. Feedback can be written, can be audio, or can be visual feedback. So this time, my feedback will consist of the images you can see on the blog post. What are my notes? My notes are the images that are not there. Okay, perhaps I get a showcase award for the shortest audio feedback ever. And of course, this results in not a shut up!
I think he deep down resents the time limit.
Well, Brian, perhaps you're right about that.
And to that, I have to say, I have to revisit it and say,
hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck, hell? What the hell? Hold your horses!
Yeah. What the heck, hell? What the hell? Fred, giving us a visual feedback on an audio show. You are amazing.
Without giving us any visuals.
Here's my visual feedback. Yeah. I'm imagining in my head.
Yeah, because that was the funny thing. The funniest part about it, he had given us very few screenshots at the time that he sent this in. So, because originally, you know, we were going to record this at our normal time, which is about 9 p.m. Eastern on Fridays, and we had to postpone about 12 hours. And at the time, it was like almost no images that he gave us at all. So it's like, when I first listened to this, I'm like, I don't get it. I even told him, I said, I don't get it.
Did I miss something?
Yeah, and then I had to listen to it a couple more times. So there are a little like interstitials in between that whoop whoop. That's of course the Arium sound effect.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which are, I guess that is what when they say purr or he says purr, that's what he's talking about. Yes. It doesn't really sound like a purr to me.
It can. So. There are times when it does sound like a purr, but that's not time that it does, or at least it's too short to sound like a purr. But I think I'll nominate this for the strangest voicemail ever.
And shortest.
And shortest. So and I don't need to give you a showcase award because you already gave yourself one.
I know, right? What is this?
Thank you. Giving yourself
awards.
Thank you. All right. So before I get into his real voicemail that
The second one.
Yeah, okay.
We were informed that that was, in fact, a real one.
Yes. he did want us to, it's on the Facebook group, there's a side-by-side that he did of young Ethan Peck, Spock, with a very, very similar look of Cybok, of Lawrence Luckinbill from Star Trek V, and how He said, I think Lawrence Luckinbill, Cybok, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, really could be an older version of Ethan Peck, Spock. Interesting. I won't play that because I played it way too many times. But I will play this.
What?
Oh, man.
I could even play this.
It's not true. That's impossible.
Okay, Luke.
Anyway, so we did get one reaction. Lee says, you know, it's 2019. We've got to get rid of the Vulcan bowl cut. I mean, come on. A style has to change more than 50 years. Since then, uniforms to multi-universes have been upgraded. It's time for a hairstyle change. Even the Klingons get changed every 2 to 3 decades.
I understand what you're saying, but I don't really think that's a bowl cut in the traditional sense of bowl cut.
Well, you know, looking at Spock's current haircut, it looks more like Beatles style.
Mop head or something. I can't remember what they called it exactly.
But it does, it looks more like Chekhov's original haircut from TOS.
Yeah.
Where you look like a monkey or a beetle, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of. All right. So we have a second voicemail.
60s shag.
What's that?
I said that 60s shag.
Yeah. All right. So we have a second voicemail from Fred. Thank goodness. All right. So let's play that.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for episode 9. A very, very nice episode. A lot is explained and the acting was so, so good. Especially the interaction, of course, between Spock and Michael. Their arguments and their resentment for each other. And I think this forms the basis of, I won't say hatred, but don't understand each other, just living in another universe, more or less. I don't think they really will reconcile. Perhaps they get ground where it's livable. And I also think that's in the sense of the canon, because we never hear something of Michael, of course, in the TOS series. So the resentment for each other or breaking up or nothing wanting to do with your brother or sister is based here in what happened in their youth and what happened here again. So I think we shouldn't expect reconciliation, perhaps a little bit, but not too much that they would have contact in the rest of their lives. What I, of course, liked was the iconic chess set. It's a pity it's damaged now, but it was very nice pictured here. And another thing was that the discussion about the game was underlaying under their personal discussion. So that was a second layer. There were a lot of metaphors in it through the chess play. And I think this was very, very, very well done. And second big topic, of course, is Arium. We see here a little bit of her previous life. And of course, it's a very, very sad story. Just being married, being happy, being a nice young couple, and then flying home, losing your partner, losing half of your body. So quite a sad story. And here she is just misused. She's just violated by a foreign entity. And because she is a cyborg, although you could think she's a cat because she's purring, she is just used for this purpose. And there were some predictions that she could be the angel. But after this episode, I think that prediction is gone. So only 3 minutes, my shortest feedback ever. Okay, perhaps I get a showcase award for the shortest audio feedback ever. And of course, this results in not a shut up.
I think he deep down resents the time limit.
Well, Brian, perhaps you're right about that.
Okay, you reuse that. I think he thought that we were going to not play the other one, but
we did. Ha ha! Jokes on you.
And we told you we probably were going to play it and try to make comedy gold out of it. So, anyway, we actually didn't get much voicemail this week. One of our normal contributors, Mark, he's now in absentia for two episodes. So he actually let me know that he wasn't going to be able to contribute this week. He's behind. So
I understand.
We miss
life and such.
We miss you, Mark.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you yet again for putting in the showcase word, which makes it so that I don't have to do it. Because sometimes I forget and I actually put it in post. But this is not an example of it. There. See, that time I did it, but I didn't have to do it because you already did it. Okay. So a couple things. Use of the Arium sound effect again. It would be more effective, I think, if it was either a little bit louder or a little bit longer or something. I don't know. Maybe I'll play with it in post and make it a little more obvious. But yes, I enjoyed the chess play. I hadn't thought about the fact that Arium was violated, but clearly she was, which makes it even sadder about her story.
Yeah.
And to me, if this was a point that I was going to make that I kind of hinted at, I think that this is a possibility. I mentioned it before about the possibility that Zora comes out of Arium. And the other thing about that is that if Arium survives this, it seems to me Jet Reno would be the person to do it, since we see in that first episode of hers that she has been doing all this like engineering stuff to bodies. And if anybody was going to do this, it would be by Jet Reno, you know, working on a cyborg. So maybe somehow she could revive Arium. I don't know, but I don't think so. I mean, it has been suggested this is her last episode, but you never know. I mean, this is Star Trek. Obviously, we saw Culber die, and yet he's still around. So yeah,
even Tasha Yar came back.
So we'll see. But I thought of, for you Jet Reno fans that have been pining for her, and rightly so, because she's a great character that I definitely want to see again. I love like for her to be a regular on season 3. You know, as chief engineer. I mean, come on. Make it happen.
I know. Paul and Hugh need to go off and find themselves, and Jet Reno is taking over.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the quips that she had with Stamets that one episode.
Yeah. Fix that with duct tape, too.
Duct tape, yeah. Anyway.
You know, I can fix that analogy with duct tape.
All right. Well, anyway. Fred, of course, thank you. Thank you so much. All of the lovely visuals that you get in the blog posts are courtesy of a selection of images that come from
Fred.
And I think, you know, it is kind of a pain to do in kind of constructing it, but I think it's worth it because it really does make. So I should mention, if you guys don't look at the blog posts, like when the episodes come out, you should look at it on most podcast clients of choice now. If you, well, at least Pocket Cast does. I don't know if everybody does. But if you look at it, you will get like a representation of the article. So you'll see images and stuff like that. So I recommend taking a look at it, and you can see like what I've written and what the images that Fred has been able to pull out of the episodes. Because it, let's face it, it is such a beautiful show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't
visually appealing.
Yeah, I challenge anyone to find a show that is consistently more beautiful in its cinematography than this show. There may be a show or two, but this is really hard to come by. Even I would say even Game of Thrones isn't quite there. I think this does exceed Game of Thrones in how it blows you away visually every time.
Visual aesthetics.
Yes, Game of Thrones definitely blows you away, but I think the way Star Trek Discovery does it is right up there, and in some ways succeeds it.
Well, I think a lot of times though, Game of Thrones is very gritty and very kind of dirty, I guess, and sort of.
Yeah, and it's its own thing. I mean, it does what it does quite well as well.
Yeah.
But like if you compare the visuals to say the Orville. You know, the Orville is kind of an update to the 90s aesthetic. Now, it reminds me so much visually of, say, Voyager.
Oh, really? It totally reminds me of TNG.
I was going to say, it reminds me of Voyager, which reminds me of TNG. So,
yeah.
It's very much a continuation of that kind of look, where I think Discovery is very much a continuation of other shows that aren't Star Trek. So it's taken from other shows like Game of Thrones, like The Expanse, you know, shows like that, that are doing kind of similar genre things, but have updated things. So anyway, enough of that. Do you have anything to say about Fred's feedback besides?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
All right. We have another voicemail from Todd.
My name's Todd. I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana, and I'm calling for the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I wanted to rate this most recent episode 10, Pattern Lambda 10s. This was the best episode of the series so far, in my opinion, and I thought that was going to be hard to match over the last few weeks as they've continued to increase their writing capacity and storytelling abilities. Anyway, I'm Todd. I'm the blind Todd. So if you want to differentiate me from all other Todds, call me Thicket Dweller. Have a great day.
Thicket Dweller.
Well, now okay. We get an explanation for that.
Well, we know why he said that. I still don't have any idea why. Or what a Thicket Dweller is. Or why he would call himself a Thicket Dweller.
Well, we can let him explain that in a further voicemail. But yes, thank you, Todd, for your voicemails. And appreciate that.
I'm sorry we didn't get all of the last one.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah. I'm not sure what happened there, but you know, we played what we had. So, all right. I think we should just move on to the next one.
Okay.
LT from NC says, I have to say that Frakes has come into his own as a director, and I think he can make a compelling episode. You think so? I don't think so. No, seriously. Yes, of course. Riker can deliver the goods. Maybe the end game of the control plot angle is why no one knows about Section 31. Certainly seems to be going in that direction. I mean, certainly we can see evidence as to why Section 31 may not be a thing anymore. For one thing, their admirals have all been killed off, and we also have the evidence of them doing things that are kind of not Starfleet-y.
Not very Starfleet-y.
Yeah, because I think that it's one thing of the AI kind of taking control, so to speak.
Get it?
No pun intended. Pun intended. But we also have the fact that, like, Leland and the whole thing about trying to suck Spock's brain out. Like, I can't think. Was that an actual command from Control? Did he get an order from Control to say, suck out Spock's brain? That's an order, you know?
Yeah. And at what point in time do you question that? Say, wait a minute. Are you sure?
Yeah. That's why I tend to think that that wasn't a command. That was get Spock's thoughts by, you know,
any means necessary.
Yeah. We want to know what he knows by any means necessary. But it also seems like it was get anything on AI by any means necessary as well.
Yeah.
So, okay. Shall we move on?
All right. As an errand.
Yeah.
Says, well, now we know that Control is going to kill everybody. I'm in those feels over Arium being spaced, though. Yeah, I'm having the feels as well. I'm in a serious case of the feels.
Mike in Cleveland says, the show did a great job making Arium matter to us. I don't believe this was Arium's end just yet. Well, he seems to. Well, I'm not necessarily saying that I agree with it, but I do see a scenario where that could happen. Through Jet Reno, like I said. Still thinking she might be the Rhett Angel. This might have been a flawless episode. I already watched it twice and will be watching at least one more tonight. And then he has two crazy harebrained theories, which I'm going to give here because I don't think that they're really anything spoilery because it is simply some crazy harebrained theories and speculation. First one is Giorgio will captain the Discovery before the series end. Well, she already has.
No, she didn't.
Well, no, she did. In the season finale, you know, scared Kelpian makes for tough Kelpian. She was captaining it then. Second thing, and I think this has to get one of these. Michael Burnham is Giorgio's biological child?
What? Okay.
It's a trap!
It's not a telenovela.
I just don't know. I don't know how that would work. I mean, I don't see any Asian features in Burnham.
No.
You know, not to make it all about that. But
I mean, come on.
Right.
Facts are facts. Biology doesn't lie.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's there and I'm just not seeing it, but I don't think so.
It's possible. I mean, I've certainly...
And after all, this is a fictional show. It could be just whatever, but I don't think so.
And for that matter, Philippa Giorgio has, I think that's a Greek name, Giorgio. And clearly she's mostly Asian. She's so who knows?
Greek.
Well, exactly. So, you know, it's one of those things.
It is.
So it's possible.
Unlikely.
Yeah. Okay, so we got a couple of pieces of feedback from Rick from Cleveland. And Rick from Cleveland, I think I'm correct in this, that this is all you. Because we got one piece on Facebook and we got one piece through the feedback form. So at colonspowermedia.com/feedback. So if I'm wrong about that and you are not the same person, Rick's plural, please let me know. Otherwise, I think it's Rick singular. Okay, so he says... First of all, from Facebook, he says, an awesome episode followed by being noticed by Riker. Holy shnikes. And he screen captures a thing that says, he tweeted Jonathan Frakes. He says, wow, incredible episode tonight. I've enjoyed each of your hashtag discovery episodes. This one, though, powerful stuff. Thank you. And that was liked by Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah. The image shows Jonathan Frakes liked your tweet.
Yes. And he posted that on the Facebook group, like I said, in a separate post. So you can look at it on there.
Yeah.
From his written feedback from the goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback form, he says, what an episode. There's so much packed into this episode. Frank says, raise the bar once again. I could find no real no's worth mentioning. The lack of a Reno in an engineering crisis is close, but the Stamets and Spock scene needed to happen as it did. As usual, it took more than one watch to take it all in. It was on second viewing that I realized it was Non that opened the airlock. Burnham couldn't do it. I'm going to stop right there because I did not realize that myself.
You didn't?
No, I did not realize it until... I actually saw it mentioned by other people on the Facebook group, and then I went back and looked.
Oh, man. Oh. See, this is how Sonequa Martin-Green is so amazing, because if you pay attention to her face, you can see it, because she's like in the middle of talking to her, kind of, and suddenly she's gone, and she's like,
yeah.
Anyway.
I missed the detail, but it certainly was there. It just was one of those things that's like I had to be told, because, you know. Because I have to watch this show multiple, you know, 47 times to pick up on these things sometimes, you know?
And some of us don't have time to do that. So we get to watch it once and get what we get.
I hope that maybe next week we get a bit more of the Arium story. I think we will. That's my take, like, especially if they eulogize her.
Yeah.
Which will be similar to T-Dog. Because after T-Dog died, we find out more about T-Dog and going around and getting, again, sorry, TWD spoiler here from like several seasons ago. So, you know.
That's old.
Yeah, this is like,
decided to watch
this is like 2012. So, yeah, T-Dog goes around and picks up a bunch of elderly people during the start of the apocalypse to try to get them to safety. But we find out about this after he died. So. Similar kind of thing could be happening with Arium, because I really do want to know how she ended up as a cyborg. Because that, it's like, okay, was she, like, how did they save her? Like, how did she turn into RoboCop is what I want to know.
Yeah.
Because essentially she's like RoboCop without the drop your weapons or there will be trouble.
Yeah.
And just when you think it's safe to stop crying at the end, turn up the volume on the credits if you dare, and listen to Arium drift off as her favorite memory fades to darkness.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but doggone it. Yeah, that's...
That's what I thought. Well, at first, at the very first, I thought, oh, they're just going to... It's just going to be quiet, which sometimes I've seen shows do where something momentous happens. They just have silence at the end for the end credits instead of some kind of music. But then I heard the waves and I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Star Trek hasn't made me that choked up since I was 10 years old seeing Wrath of Khan for the first time.
Yeah. Khan! I mean, Nan!
All right. Next.
All righty. Next is James. And James says, Project Daedalus did a phenomenal job with finally getting us acquainted with Arium in the time it really hits you when she ends up getting spaced. I really thought for a moment Michael would be able to do something to save her, but alas, it wasn't to be. I guess we know she's not the Red Angel now. However, did she possibly reveal that Michael is?
Oh.
Could that be why she chose to come to Spock? I have a sneaking suspicion that you were right originally with the observation on the Angel's haircut, Brian. I also think we may get a time-traveling episode this season. Ruthie, here we go with the causality loops again.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it does seem to be suggesting that, you know, like, why do they go back to Terra Elysium? Oh, reasons. Because
they went to Terra Elysium.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it seems like it's going to. But if it is Burnham, and yes, I did notice it in the second episode, but I will also say that in the first episode, the Red Angel that appears to Burnham does not look like Burnham. I mean, I looked at that footage again, and, you know, it is distorted and whatever, but if anything, it looked like Saru than anybody. It did not look like her, but I don't know. And if it is Burnham, how does that happen? And what is this Project Daedalus? And there's so many pieces of the puzzle that we haven't seen. So trying to figure out how this all fits together at this point is, I'm still trying to hold back. And this is unlike last season, where I was really quick on the trying to, oh, it's this. I'm holding back a little bit and I'm seeing little pieces and I'll bring them up when I see them. But I'm letting the story kind of tell itself because I have a feeling that there are so many pieces of the puzzle that I haven't seen yet. They're not, I guess what you could say is they're not telegraphed like I think they were in the first season. Like in the first season, if you were paying attention, if you were like trying to put two and two together, you could see things like Tyler is Vok. You could see that, especially after you see the all pieces put together, you could see the clues that Lorca is from the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
Although it still blew me away when it actually was the case, because I know it was suggested to us. I know Mark had theorized it before we actually knew about it. But when it actually came in place, it still hit. But this time, yeah, the possibility of her being the Red Angel is... I can see, I mean, I suggested it very early on, but I'm not seeing a reason why yet. So I'm holding back judgment because there are, I'm not seeing all the connective tissue yet to explain why.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen Spock portrayed with such emotion. I'm not sure how to feel about it myself. Very contrasting with what we've seen of him in the past or future, but our past. Is something going to happen that makes him redouble his efforts in embracing logic come TOS time? I also really like that he was able to help Stamets take a look at his relationship with Culber from a different perspective. He, Stamets, seemed to give a sense of almost subtle epiphany with the advice Spock gave. Anthony Rapp continues to really deliver in his performance. Can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts and can't wait till next week.
Indeed. Our last bit of feedback is from Donna. She says, my emotions were seriously compromised here. Emotional battles between Spock and Michael. Emotional parallel revelations from Spock to Stamets. It's not you, but me. Does that read right?
That's what she wrote.
Yeah. I think you mean that to Stamets, he's saying, it's not you, it's Cobra, I think.
Yeah.
That's what she means.
I think so.
Yeah. Emotional climax with Arium's sacrifice, but unfortunately by Michael's hand. Another burden to shoulder, Michael. And on the bridge, Spock says to Michael, it's you or her. He loves his sister, blood or not, deeply. I hope this will thaw this relationship out. Yeah, I think he's very conflicted. I think he may love her, but he certainly seems to resent her, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say about that. It's very complex, the relationship they've got going on. I am hoping Spock greets her when she gets off the transporter. Then he holds her into his arms. Yeah, that probably won't happen.
Yeah, no kidding. I don't think they're a huggy type of people.
Yeah, yeah.
They barely even touch physically. They got no PDA.
All right. I don't have any other notes because, I don't know, we've covered this thing in an exhaustive way.
Oh, really? I do.
I figured you did.
Yes, I do.
All right. Let's get on to it.
Oh, my goodness. Some questions I asked in the beginning of the episode were answered by the end. Initially, I was wondering, I mean, I kind of remembered that we sort of knew what was going on, or I should say, just to put it bluntly, what Arium was, but I sort of didn't really remember because I was thinking things like, is she like an intelligence that was put into a robot body or whatever? But obviously,
a robot.
Yeah, exactly. A robot body. And is it safe to assume that Spock is the only person that the Red Angel showed this vision to? I mean, out of the entire population of the entire universe, Spock is the only one. I kind of feel like that's also a little bit hubris.
And not true, actually. It's not true because there have been the people in the church. Mm-hmm. They saw it. Now, whether or not there was anything else beyond that. Oh, okay. See, this is where I think maybe the Terra Elysium fits back into the plot. Maybe they realize that the people in the church saw the Red Angel, and maybe the people in the church wrote down things, you know, in scripture or whatever, that tell them what the Red Angel said to them or something like that. So, like, maybe that's how they end up going back there, because I'm thinking they are going to go back there. Okay, I wouldn't even be surprised if they go back to Talos, Talos 4, I don't know how that would fit in. Certainly isn't Red Angel thing. But Terra Elysium, I have heard that they're going back there at some point. And it seems to me, your point here, the fact that he's not the only one that the Red Angel appeared to. The Red Angel appeared to them.
No, not appeared to, but showed all that stuff to.
Oh, okay. No, you're kind of defeating my point. So no, that's good. No, because I was coming with this stuff off the cuff. This is all stuff that I'm going to leave in, by the way, including me saying that I'm going to leave it in.
Including that part?
Yes. Well, because reasons.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So at the time that I was watching this episode and I wrote that down, that's kind of what I was thinking. Well, I mean, why would you just automatically assume that I'm the only person in the entire universe out of all the living sentient beings in the universe that would have been shown this? Now, later in the episode, when I was thinking maybe Burnham is the Red Angel, that kind of explains why he would be the only person in the entire universe that got shown this. So, but I'm thinking in terms of trying to figure out why you're the only person that's shown this, it seems kind of like maybe you shouldn't necessarily, I don't know. It just kind of seems like you might be limiting yourself by looking at it as I'm the only person that was shown this. I mean, not only the only sentient being out of the entire universe, the only sentient being out of the entire universe of space and time.
And for that matter, why did the Red Angel only show them that? Why not say, oh, I don't know, show him the whales that are going to come to destroy Earth inadvertently, such that they have to go back in time?
Yeah. But also, why the child Spock?
Indeed. So it suggests that Red Angel was Burnham. And then the whole thing about it all starts with you or begins with you. God, I don't know. I just don't know.
I don't know either. But my point is, if that's the case, there has to be a reason. But at the same time, why is that necessarily the case? I mean, it could be, but it couldn't. I don't know. I just kind of thinking that you might be limiting yourself by jumping to that conclusion that's not necessarily proven.
We have to just simply accept the fact that we don't know at this point and move from that. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, well, I mean, I wrote down the two important, I thought, quotes between Cornwell and Pike. Sometimes in war, the terrible choice is the only choice. And then Pike says, giving up our values in the name of security is to lose the battle in advance. It's like, yes, I like that. I kind of was thinking, like, why hasn't anyone, as I think we've kind of already talked about, why hasn't anyone realized something was wrong with Arium previously?
Yeah.
I mean, and I guess this kind of goes back to the whole non-creepin' thing. But, and to me, honestly, though, I didn't really feel like it was necessarily out of the security officer's character to, she has a suspicion. She doesn't have proof. So, I mean, if she has, if all she has is a suspicion of something that seems kind of not right, that's not necessarily something that you bring to the captain of the ship, the captain who has lots of different things to deal with, not just your security officer's gut feeling.
Mm.
But I think that, like I said before, that kind of should have been shown maybe in a previous episode.
Yep.
Like at least someone taking note of this something going on with her.
This is possibly one of those things that maybe Gretchen J. Berg and Aaron Harberts had intended to go to, and either it was lost during the showrunner change or something, but it seemed to me like there were some things that could have been set up beforehand with suspicions, but also with her character that weren't. And that's my take. That in some ways I feel petty by giving it a 9, but, and I think I'm penalizing the season over the episode, because as an episode, it was very effective, but the episode would have been helped, I think. And the overall season would have been helped had they featured Arium throughout the season.
Yeah. And maybe shown throughout the season, non in the background doing the side eye.
Yeah.
But okay, we didn't get that. So okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every time I watch Vulcans on screen, I always think about the whole logic versus emotion, blah, blah, blah stuff. And I feel like the scene where she has that rather emotional exchange with Spock and the whole whatever it was thing with the, I can't remember exactly what he said to her, but basically said that she shouldn't always assume that she can be responsible for everything, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
And she's getting the feels. And then Pike calls her to the bridge. Like, this right here is a perfect example of humans being able to be logical, because we're very good at compartmentalizing if we necessarily need to. Yes, she was raised on Vulcan, but I think a lot of people do it a lot more than is necessarily shown, I guess, on this ship. I mean, there are a lot of times when you just, I cannot emotionally process right now because I need to do other things that require me to not emotionally process, because if I do emotionally process, I will not be able to function. So therefore, I'm putting it in a little box and sticking it in a corner of my mind and I'm carrying on. I think that's kind of, honestly, I think that's kind of what Vulcans do all the time.
Yeah.
They put all their emotions in a little box and just carry on, except for they never go back and deal with it later. Well, I mean, maybe they do, but they don't really express it or what have you. They just kind of, I don't know. Anyway, and that to me shows that it's wrong to assume that humans aren't capable of logic, which I feel like is something that in the context of the show that Vulcans do a lot, is that they say that we are, you know, humans are illogical and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, just because we sometimes act illogically does not mean that we aren't capable of logic.
Yeah.
Like, to me personally, logic is very important. I need things to be logical. Otherwise, my brain can't make sense of it.
Yes.
That doesn't mean that I don't have emotional reactions or that I don't sometimes react illogically. In fact, I'm very aware of when I'm acting illogically because I'm afraid of snakes because they're creepy. I understand it's an illogical, irrational fear, but I don't care. That's what it is. By its very nature, it's an irrational fear. So, you know, that's just what it is. And that's, I don't know. But at the same time, I'm like, most of the time, 99% of the time, I need things to be logical to, in order for my brain to, you know, process something. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like they could have drawn the conclusion that something was going on because a computer doesn't need life support. And if life support has been deactivated all over that place, then...
And how come we only see four admirals? There's nobody else?
I don't know, but maybe they got rid of everybody else or something. I don't know.
Seemed like a budget thing. It's like, we can only afford four actors. We can't afford any extras this episode, so we just won't show them. And we'll say something like, yada, 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 there's probably more on the station or something.
I mean, there probably are, to be honest. They only showed those four because those four were trying to get to that section, right? Those four were trying to get into that area to shut down whatever Control was doing.
Yes.
So, and Control eliminated them. As far as we know, there could be people all over that station who are also floating around and dead and cold.
Well, that makes me wonder, was Pitar really a logic extremist or did she just appear to be
based on the holograms? Maybe.
Yeah.
Because to put it frankly, an AI is a logic extremist.
Yeah, true.
So, I guess this could be another hold your horses or maybe a no or whatever. But it seemed like Nan was way too easily compromised.
Yeah.
I mean, all you got to do is rip that thing off her face and she's down. Shouldn't that be a little bit more protected then?
And what does that thing do?
It helps her breathe, duh.
How? Is it?
I don't know.
Because it, like, you notice without it, she's got like black, like where it connects to her face. So, like,
I mean, I think that wasn't necessarily black. I think it was just, hey, I just got a piece of something ripped off my skin that was surgically implanted.
Okay.
But. She still, does it have to have both of them or it doesn't work? Because she still had the other one. So.
Oh, maybe that wasn't enough to kill her to only have one off. Maybe it just simply compromised her.
Yeah, well, it certainly looked like she was down for the count when she stopped moving.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like they should not have shown her stop moving.
Yeah.
I mean, you could still move very slowly.
Yeah.
But because when it comes to your breathing, once you're down, you're down.
Right.
You don't really start breathing again if you can't breathe. Like if you're running out of oxygen and your oxygen is gone, you don't suddenly get a second wind and come back and start doing stuff because there is no second wind because there's no wind. Because you're, you know, I was like, yeah, I knew it was Nan that did it, but I was kind of like, that was a little... because they sort of showed her, I mean, maybe she was just gathering herself. And so she had to take a break and pause in her crawling toward her thing or whatever. But it seemed like they should have showed her continuing to crawl and maybe get the thing. And that's what allowed her to pull the airlock. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Anyway, I just thought, dang, that was too easy to take her out personally. That's kind of what I thought. So Arium is telling Michael that it wanted Arium to kill Michael and everything was because of her. So I'm thinking that's why Spock was chosen, because he's the only one who's Michael's sister, brother.
Yeah. Michael's sister. Yeah.
Michael is his sister.
Right.
He is her only sibling. So, but what is unique about Michael? So that is what is unique about Spock. But what is unique about Michael? Is it because Michael is the Red Angel? I don't know.
Don't know at this point, but it does suggest that it's going there.
Kind of.
Just don't know why. Don't know how.
Yeah.
There is evidence, and there has been for quite some time, as to the who, but we don't know how or where or why, or we kind of know what, but we don't know what, because we don't know what that suit is or where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Unless that's Daedalus.
Maybe. That's a good point.
As long as it's not Icarus.
Mwahaha.
If you don't get that up, look it up. It's Icarus was Daedalus sun, and he flies too close to the sun.
The sun with wax wings that melted. And anyway, oh, those Greeks and their mythology.
Giorgio.
Yeah.
Anyway.
To me, the very end part was very impactful. I thought, I was like, oh my gosh. And how exactly did Control turn into this AI? And to me, that's kind of, that's kind of a loop because I think this goes back to when they were getting the stuff from that thing and then the probe came in and it was their probe that they sent out, but it came back to them
500 years.
Yeah. Altered.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, did Control become an AI because of that? Or was it already an AI kind of a thing? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, is that another loop? Like, did it happen because it happened, or did something else happen before? And it is looking at its past to get more information. Like, why is it looking for all this information on AI?
Because it's trying to improve itself.
Right. So, but I don't know. It's just,
it's also worth saying that although it didn't get all of what Irium tried to upload, it did get 25% of it. So that would suggest that it will be 25% improved, or maybe more, but it got a bunch of more information about AI. So it should certainly be stronger the next time we encounter it.
Yeah. And I guess, maybe this is obvious, maybe it's not, but it seems to me that the Red Angel's opponent is Control.
Yes.
But I'm still curious as to how this happened to Control. I mean, did it happen organically? Like, we keep feeding our experiences and information and data into this thing, and eventually, do we know whether or not it's a learning computer? Because I can see an AI evolving from something if it's a learning computer, but it doesn't necessarily seem like that's what it is.
Hmm.
Like, they never said anything about it being a learning computer. They just said it was the Starfleet's threat assessment. So, and I've seen, or maybe not seen, but read or whatever, that in the past where to a computer, sometimes the best way to protect humans is to kill them all. So.
Yes. Again, proof that there was no Terminator in the Star Trek universe, because otherwise it would have learned all of this from Skynet.
Yeah. Well, they would all know, too, and be looking for the singularity. And be like, oh, crap, it's happening!
Yeah.
I don't know. This whole artificial intelligence time loop thing and blah, blah is just crazy. It makes my brain hurt.
Yeah, so the question to that is, did Control generate the seven signals, or were the seven signals created by the Red Angel? Or were they something else?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't know.
Questions that we don't have answers to, that we simply, they are still mysteries out there. There are no clues as to who set them, except that it could possibly be from the Red Angel. But then again, how did the Red Angel send them?
Yeah.
And another point that was brought up in this episode, that the Red Angel has appeared in places where there were no signals. Like, there was no signal when it appeared to Spock. So, like, what of that? So it's just, there's a lot there. And it's good. You don't get me wrong. I don't need to have these things told to me. In fact, the fact that they're not told to me is good, because I want to know more. I'm not sitting here like I was last season going, I figured it out, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting, and again, sorry, people that don't watch the show, but, and Ruthie will identify with this, when it is revealed that Glenn is under the dumpster, I had been pushing that theory for a long time, and when it finally happened several weeks later, I said, I knew it, and Ruthie reacted in a very negative way, because
it was completely illogical.
But anyway, the point being that it was telegraphed in that case, and like, things from first season were telegraphed, and there is some, as a viewer, figuring these things out, and when they come through, you can get a sense of like accomplishment when you see them, but it can also take away. And in this case, like these things aren't out there so crystal.
Yeah.
There isn't enough there to be able to say definitively that this is the case. And I like that it's not there yet.
Yeah.
Because I can't figure it out.
I much prefer being on the case of I just don't know.
Like, yeah.
I don't know what's going on. I have thoughts and things that make sense in a certain set of circumstances or whatever, but I can't definitively say, oh, it's this or whatever. So, yeah. I don't know.
9.5
9.5 What?
Yeah. I'm going to raise it to a 9.5
Okay, good. I'm glad.
I've been teetering on it, but I think I will. Like, and really the only thing, like I say, it's not a fault of the episode that they didn't do these things. It's a fault of the season. But season-wise, 9 episodes in versus 9 episodes in last season, these 9 episodes are way better than the first 9 episodes for season one.
And it,
way better.
Honestly, the more I watch this season, the more it feels like Star Trek to me.
Yes.
Whereas the first season kind of like, okay, well, they're saying they're Star Trek, but just because you call yourself something doesn't really mean that it's true.
And we loved it anyway.
Yeah. And I mean, it was still good, but it just didn't feel like Star Trek. But yeah, I was still watching it. I was like, okay, I mean, I could say I have black hair until I'm blue in the face, but that doesn't mean I actually have black hair.
Yeah. And the people that hated the show, I understood why some of them hated the show. This season, though, you know, while I can I still understand, you know, it is your preference. If you hate the show, I can't make you like the show, and you're entitled to hate the show. It doesn't make as much logical sense to me. Like, from a Star Trek fan, I have more trouble understanding why someone that loved previous Star Treks doesn't love this. Because yes, it is updated, and yes, it is different. And if you get hung up on those things, okay, I get it. But this is damn good Star Trek.
Yeah.
This episode, and well, the last several, have been such good Star Trek episodes.
Yeah.
I have trouble relating to the ones that are still trumpeting this. This is not Star Trek. Well, yes, it is. You just stop watching. All right. Anyway, do you have anything else?
I mean, I wrote down it's doubtful that Starfleet ordered the attack.
Right.
And I kind of feel like they maybe should have figured it out sooner, because there were a lot of things, a lot of inconsistencies that maybe should have been questioned further, which I guess really goes to the whole blindly following something and thinking for yourself thing. Like, maybe you shouldn't just blindly follow what someone or something or whatever tells you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because Starfleet has always been a good entity, as opposed to, say, you know, the Cardassians or the Romulans or whatever, that doesn't necessarily mean that every single order that will come from, air quotes, Starfleet is going to be a good thing. Which I think is the whole reason why Pike was there, I guess. I mean, why Pike was put out of that war, because he's the one that would question. Just because Starfleet is telling me to do something doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to do it based on the fact that Starfleet is always good. I'm going to evaluate it based on my own moral code and decide whether or not this is a good or bad thing to do. I guess that's all I have to say.
All right. So let's move on to our ship-wide announcements. Okay. So as far as things about this episode, I usually mention the Ready Room. And this episode features, you might be surprised, I doubt it, Hannah Cheeseman, who of course plays Arium, was the guest this week. And I would highly recommend checking that out. It is on Facebook, YouTube, and also on the CBS All Access app. I don't know if it's on Netflix or not, because I don't get the show that way. But it was a really good interview, and I did not realize this, but she is a Star Trek fan going way back. In fact, Jonathan Frakes, she was kind of geeking out over, because Jonathan Frakes was her first TV crush.
Aww.
Yeah, she said as a young girl, she thought he looked dreamy.
I can see that.
Yeah, he was a handsome man. Well, it still is, but...
I was going to say, what's this was?
Yeah. All right. So anyway, check that out. There's a link to it on the Facebook group. Actually, a couple of them. So I didn't realize when I first posted it, it would turn into a video of it, because originally it wasn't, but now it is. So it's there twice. Also, we do have another Picard casting announcement.
Ooh.
And that is Evan Evagora. Reminds me of like Rod Roddenberry. Yeah. Evan Evagora. And he is Australian. And he must be a new actor because all of his credits say either 2019 or 2020 as when the shows are coming out. He's going to be on Fantasy Island, apparently. I didn't even realize that was coming back. But he was announced as one of the new characters, and he's a young guy. We've been going really long this week, so I'm going to hold off talking about this because we haven't really brought it up, but there was a website, there is a link to it on the Facebook group that gave the casting call sheet to the characters of the Picard show. Just go to the Facebook group and look at it. Their types kind of fit three of the characters that are listed in this call sheet. His seems to suggest the Romulan in the, because there's listed in there a 17-year-old Romulan that is a part of the cast. So when you look at those names, a practice in today's Hollywood is the casting sheet usually uses placeholder names. So it lists the Romulan as K-Bar or Kabar. And to me, that doesn't sound like a Romulan name. It sounds more Klingon. So I tend to think that it's probably not. Because, okay, it mentions a hologram and it calls it Dr. Smith. I tend to think it's probably not Dr. Smith, okay?
Yeah.
So that's why I say take the names with a grain of salt. Burnham, for example, was originally touted as Rainsford originally.
I wonder why they do that.
I think they do that because, I'll give you an example. Michael Cudlitz was cast as Abraham. And they had him listed as somebody else because they don't want to tip the name of this. Now, in this series, it doesn't make as much sense because we don't know the names of these characters.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's because there's already material out there.
Right, right. And same thing with Game of Thrones, you know, but this doesn't make as much sense. They just do this. I don't know why they do it, but they do it these days. But this is a good indicator of the types of characters they're trying to fill. So just look at that on the Facebook group. All right. So that's it. And we've been going way. This is, I think, the longest podcast I've ever recorded. Why do we keep doing this to ourselves? Ruthie, why don't you tell people how they can.
There's a lot to say.
I know. That tells you that the show is worth talking about. But tell people how they can get in contact with us.
Okay. As we previously mentioned, you can submit your theories and feedbacks to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. You can call us at 304-837-2278 or StarTrekGSM@gmail.com. Send us an email. We have a designated episode discussion thread on Facebook, which you can find us at facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast. Yay! We now have more than 100 members. Woohoo!
Yep. We finally broke the barrier.
Woohoo! We broke the 100 member barrier. It's a little bit like the sound barrier, but not quite.
Just not quite as loud.
Yeah, right. Exactly. you can tweet us at Star Trek GSM. You can also find us on the TV Time app. And you can, leave us feedback there by commenting on the post in that
app. The newly updated TV Time app.
Yeah, they've done some things that I'm not a huge fan of.
They actually did some more things. So
yeah, they're always doing things, but until they make it the way it was before, I'm not sure I'm going to be super happy.
Yeah. A great way you can support us is by subscribing to us. That way you get the episodes when they come out directly. If you use Apple Podcasts, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple and get all of the podcasts within the Golden Spiral Media Network. You can find them there. You can subscribe. There is a brand new Twilight Zone podcast for the new series called The Fifth Dimension. That is just out with Robert and Daryl. Have a listen. Of course, Twilight Zone is on CBS All Access. I don't know if it's on Netflix globally or not. I think it might be, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, check it out. And I know that April 1st is when, ironically, which is kind of funny, April Fool's Day for Twilight Zone. That show's coming out, so check it out. Anyway, also, while you're in Apple Podcasts, help us out. Like Brian Shiro, Brian from Hawaii, helped us out by giving us a glowing 5-star review over the last week. He says that this podcast completes my Star Trek Discovery experience.
Aww.
We would really appreciate it in Apple Podcasts if you would rate us and review us. That helps others find us. It helps on other podcasting clients as well who use the Apple, you know, iTunes API, I guess.
Yeah.
But, and things like Stitcher and Podcast Republic. And if your app allows you to write reviews, please do so. It will help us. And of course, when we have episodes coming out, share us, retweet us, tell your friends, like LT is doing, and that will help us get the word out. Because like I think I said last week, I think we do a damn fine job. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you that we're the best Star Trek podcast out there, because there's a lot of great Star Trek podcasts out there. But I think we do a fine job.
Yeah, we kind of are.
Yeah, we kind of are.
Sorry, that's my hubris showing through.
Yeah.
And you can leave the same review on every single podcast client. I don't care. You don't have to come up with a new one for every single thing.
Yeah. Just say, love the podcast. Check us out, you know.
And then copy paste anyway. And go on all the...
Anyway, just help us out. So,
yep.
Other ways you can support us and the network, go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And of course, I do the Walking Dead talk through. I took the week off this week, but the episode... Season 9, episode 13 for Choke Point will be out by the time you hear this. I'm not on the episode directly, but I am featured throughout giving feedback. Thanks to Laura and Mark for hosting the show while I'm out. The next episode coming out is very aptly titled Season 2, episode 10, The Red Angel.
Woohoo!
We don't know who it's written by, but we do know it is directed by the person that will be directing the first two episodes of the Picard series, Hanel M. Culpepper. And she directed Vaulting Ambition, episode 12 of last season. So, will we finally meet the Red Angel? I don't know. So, I don't have any predictions. We'll probably see Arium, at least in dead form.
Aww.
Again. But that's it. Until next time, I'm Brian.
I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.